Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Facet Wealth.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. In St. Peter's Square in London, bells rang out to mourn the death of Pope Benedict XVI. Vatican Speaker Matteo Bruni with funeral details.
The funerals will be on Thursday this coming week, Thursday the 5th of January, at 9:30 on St. Peter's Square, and they will be presided over by Pope Francis.
CBS's Chris Livesay tells us the former pope was criticized a lot.
Critics hit out at his slow response to the decades of cover-up of the scandal of sexual abuse by priests. And then came the scandal of leaked documents that disclosed corruption and mismanagement in the Vatican. Still, he initiated some of the changes the next pope, Francis, would later get credit for. He began the reform of Vatican finances and was the first pope to meet with victims of sex abuse and to publicly apologize, condemning what he called filth in the church.
Again, Pope Benedict XVI has died. He was 95. A legendary news anchor has also passed away. Fellow journalist Jeannie Wolfe says Barbara Walters was a trailblazer for women in the industry.
She smoothed the road for women as interviewers and as journalists. We have to remember how hard they made it for her. The male anchors did not like accepting her as a co-anchor.
Barbara Walters was 93. A major break in the brutal murders of four University of Idaho college students last November. CBS's Dina Demetrius with the latest.
Authorities arrested 28-year-old Brian Christopher Koberger in eastern Pennsylvania Friday in connection with the stabbing deaths of four University of Idaho students. The development is the biggest in the case since the November 13th fatal stabbings of Madison Mogan, Kaylee Gonsalves, Ethan Chapin, and Zana Kernodal.
Still no word on the motive. He'll be held without bail. Dozens of new state laws will take effect when the clock strikes midnight. Here's CBS's Jim Crisula.
27 states will see their minimum wage increase in 2023. Maryland and Missouri will roll out their rules and regulations for legalized recreational marijuana for adults over 21. Several states will have new regulations clearing the record of former felons who don't commit any crimes after leaving prison.
Well, today may be National Champagne Day, which is fitting for New Year's Eve. Equally fitting, tomorrow is National Hangover Day. Experts say drink lots of water to flush out your system and rehydrate. And if you think the hair of the dog theory works, you're wrong. It won't cure your hangover. It'll only get you drunk again. This is CBS News.
Facet Wealth is an SEC-registered investment advisor. They offer customized financial planning for you, not just your assets. Learn more by calling 888-598-3960.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation related, and Brewing says it's badly needed as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rowe says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Morning Cannolis with James Centel is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Hey, this is Jim Centel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Centel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Centel.
Good morning and welcome to the final broadcast of 2022 of our weekend review, our Saturday morning review of the major, the important stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you so much for joining me, not only this morning, but on so many other Saturday mornings since June of this year. This is our 28th broadcast. Yes, we're going to be continuing into 2023, perhaps even beyond that, to talk with you every Saturday morning, virtually every Saturday morning, about these major stories that affect our lives on the world basis, on the statewide basis, and even locally. Thank you again for joining me here at the studios of WAUK Radio, the Shaw in Waukesha. We're at 540 AM, 101 FM, and as always, this morning on Morning Cannolis, I'm joined by my wonderful, professional, ever-attentive producer, Kelvin, and he and I are going to be taking your phone calls this morning, as we do in every two-hour segment throughout the year, at 844-967-2789. Call in, as always, with your always excellent comments, your questions, your thoughts, your perspectives, provide to give you some sense of responses to those, but also some ways about thinking about the world around us, that the civics mission of our program, our broadcast every Saturday morning here on Morning Cannolis. We have, throughout the past 6 months, been attentive to those major stories, and this morning is no exception. As always, we have an aggressive but achievable syllabus, an academic approach to what we're going to be talking about today. Many, many stories that have populated the news locally, statewide, nationally, internationally, just in the past couple of weeks since we have been on the air. Took a brief hiatus over the Christmas weekend holiday. Back on the air this morning to talk about many of those issues. And I'm going to change our format just a little bit. I promised that today, like other programs at this time of the year, that we'd be doing a year-end retrospective. I decided in the past 10 days or so that given the significance of some major issues out there, that we would do a very intensive review of the last 10 days, 15 days or so here in America and around our 50 states and territories talking about those issues. We'll hold off on the year-end retrospective, some of those things that we should be thinking about, not only in connection with what happened in 2022, but also in 2023. We'll be doing that in January, talking not only about the past, but also about how that will animate the major issues going forward. But many, many, many major issues in law, in government, and in the promotion of the rule of law that are important to understand and know. So we're going to talk about those this morning in our first hour. Those include everything from the decision by the United States Supreme Court on this major asylum issue, the sentencing of some criminal defendants for the attempted kidnapping of the Mission governor there, the arrest of a suspect in the horrific murders of those Iowa University students in early November, some pardons issued by the president just yesterday or so, and finally, we're going to talk in this first hour, time permitting, about the returns just being released by the House of Representatives, the Ways and Means Committee, and the Joint Committee on Taxation of the former president's tax returns, about 6 years or so of those. That's going to animate the first hour of our time together. We'll see if we can get through all of that in the next 60 minutes or so. And then in the second hour, because of the major information coming out of the January 6th final hearing of December 19th, and then also the major report issued just about a week or so ago, I'm going to spend most of the hour parsing through that, getting some sense of what the major issues are there, necessarily not being able to do a deep dive into everything that is there in an over 825-page report, but doing some of the major highlights of that. That will be our second hour. Again, as to all of this, Calvin and I encourage your calls, your questions, your comments at 844-967-2789. Thank you again for joining us. Let us jump right into some of those major issues that have happened, have attracted the headlines in our newspapers, on our news feeds for the past 14 days or so. We have spent a lot of time here on this broadcast in the past 6 months talking about the Supreme Court. That will not change in 2023, not only as we're going to chat again about some of the new cases the Supreme Court has taken on, but also probably in May and certainly in June, reviewing the major decisions in probably 10, 14, 15 different cases pending right now before the United States Supreme Court, everything from environment to privacy rights to religion to all sorts of things related to healthcare and education, very significant issues. One of those has to do, of course, with immigration. There is a major case pending, as we have spoken before on this broadcast, involving the authority of the Secretary of Homeland Security under statutory authority given to him by the United States Congress to act, to administer, to put into effect, to execute our immigration policies in this nation, the authority of him to act in a way that permits him to prioritize, focus on those individuals in our nation who are truly threats to our safety and security. What happened this past year, as you well know, is that the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, issued an order directing the Border Patrol agents and immigration authorities throughout the country to prioritize those who are committing crimes and focusing on investigations of them, deportations of them, proceedings of them, so that we are focusing on those people who pose the greatest threats to our safety and security. A challenge to that administrative, that employment, that oversight decision by the secretary now before the Supreme Court. It's going to tell us whether or not the Secretary of Homeland Security has that authority under the statute to do exactly that kind of thing. In the midst of that, while that is pending, just this past week, a major story also coming out of the immigration docket before the United States Supreme Court, having to do with what you probably know colloquially as Title 42. This, of course, is the Trump administration policy enacted during the height of COVID, the pandemic itself, that allowed for the speedy expulsion of undocumented migrants coming here, seeking asylum in our nation, and reversing, if you will, the traditional practice for dealing with their applications. That practice has always been that even though there are applications for asylum pending, the United States government, the immigration authorities, would permit those people to come into our nation conditionally while their applications are being reviewed. The policy, that practice, was changed, again, on a limited basis, a time-limited basis, during COVID, during the Trump administration, based upon the notion that the movement of individuals across our borders might tend to exacerbate the problems that we're facing with the pandemic. And so this particular Title 42 permitted immigration authorities to not only expel, but also keep those asylum seekers on the other side of the border while this health emergency of our nation continued. Biden administration comes into power and says, you know, as the pandemic begins to wane a bit, do not want to indicate at all that it is over. We know that there continue to be some very, very serious concerns out there, both for individuals, groups of people, communities generally. Do not mean to limit or in any way suggest that our problems are not over. But beginning to say that this particular Title 42, this particular regulation, probably has now outlived its usefulness in that the rate of pandemic concern is now dissipating somewhat. And so propose that old, still existing, but previously imposed regulation of the Trump administration be rescinded and be removed. Number of different states, 19 different states come forward into federal court, and they say we'd like to object to that. We'd like to keep that in place on the basis, they say, that the pandemic is still a significant reason for continuing Title 42. And lo and behold, just this past week, the Supreme Court decided that it would hear that case, that would determine whether or not the lower court's decision, an appeals court decision, that said, yes, Biden administration, you can rescind that order now. The Supreme Court has said, we're going to take a look at that. And while we're taking a look at that, Title 42 continues to be in place. And what that means, of course, is that the Trump-era regulation continues to affect this suspension of our long-standing process with respect to asylum seekers in this country. In an unsigned decision just this past week, the High Court scheduled an oral argument for February on this. And then likely, once again, like all these other cases that we have talked about on this broadcast, likely going to decide this case sometime in May, perhaps June, maybe even July. But whether or not, again, this COVID-era regulation should remain in effect or should it go away? Interestingly, there are four members of the Supreme Court who object to the court not only hearing this, but potentially overturning the lower court, which would have permitted the rescission of that policy to go ahead. And not surprisingly, three of those Supreme Court justices, they're Ketanji Brown Jackson. That includes also Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, the three so-called liberal or on that side of the fence, Supreme Court justices, joined, very interestingly, by Associate Justice Neil Gorsuch. And along with Ketanji Brown Jackson, writes a fairly scathing opinion about what the Supreme Court has done here. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, specifically Justice Neil Gorsuch, say this: courts should not be in the business of perpetuating administrative edicts designed for one emergency only. He's talking plainly about the pandemic, because elected officials, talking about the Congress, maybe state officials as well, have failed to address a different emergency. And here's the all-important language coming out from Justice Gorsuch and at least three of his colleagues, again, not in the majority. He says, we are a court of law, not policymakers of last resort. And so a failure, if you will, of those people who wanted Title 42 to be rescinded, a setback for the administration in terms of its enforcement of immigration policy, a return to the policies and practices that existed prior to the Trump administration and prior to COVID, that not happening because the Supreme Court once again suspended that, said keep it all in place while we take a look at that. Major news this past week coming out of our United States Supreme Court. Again, we'll talk about that more down the road as well. We're also going to talk about other major issues here right after the break here on Morning Cannolis. Stay with us for all of that. And again, call in with your questions, your comments, your thoughts, and your perspectives.
Knucklehead CBD and Vapes is now online at knuckleheads.shop. Step into your favorite smoke shop without leaving your home. Find grinders, papers, Delta 8, and more, all from your computer or phone. With free shipping on all orders over $50, you'll be sure to find exactly what you like. You can also order for in-store pickup, so there's no wait. Knucklehead CBD and Vapes.
Visit Knuckleheads Milwaukee at 2949 North Oakland Avenue.
Order online today at knuckleheads.shop.
The Devil's Advocates. Jake from Milwaukee, you get the last word this hour.
Okay, well, Trump is totally innocent. But it's obvious that George Soros, Nancy Pelosi, BLM, with Antifa, and then Hillary's emails, with Hunter Biden's laptop, gas, high, Afghanistan, cut and run. I rest my case, dude.
What about Benghazi, Jake? You forgot Benghazi.
And Benghazi, I rest my case.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
What grows in the forest? Our imagination and our family bonds. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Highs around 37 this afternoon. Under overcast skies, southwest winds around 5 miles an hour. Mixed precipitation possible at times tonight. Lows level off around 32. Cloudy skies expected. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 42. A dusting of snow tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 21 degrees.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
We are back. Thank you once again for joining me here on our weekend review of law stories, of justice stories, of rule of law stories, of government stories here on the radio networks of Civic Media throughout the state of Wisconsin, 540 AM, 101 FM. As always, taking your phone calls and comments and thoughts and responses at 844-967-2789. Continuing in review of what has turned out to be a very chock full of news couple of weeks, and spending some time this morning in our first hour talking about some of these stories, many of which were in the headlines, some of which were not. Let's talk about another one of those major stories. We have chatted in the past on this broadcast about this horrific matter coming out of the state of Michigan. About 14 different individuals had planned to kidnap the then governor, continuing governor, recently reelected to the gubernatorial spot there. Her name is Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of the state of Michigan. About 14 individuals had plotted to kidnap her, presumably to kill her, because they were objecting to not only her policies on COVID, but also her positions on reasonable and rational gun control. Michigan, like many other states in the union, affected dramatically by gun violence in our nation. And so this group of 14 people, including two individuals named Barry Croft, the leader of this 14-member group, and Adam Fox, probably the second in command, a part of this group that organized this plot to kidnap her, to take her, and as, again, a way not only of stopping her from doing what she was doing, but also, as we're going to find here in just a moment or so, describing to other potential leaders of our nation what could happen to them if, indeed, they did not agree with this right-wing, completely anti-American set of people. Well, we know well that there is also a connection to Wisconsin in this matter, because virtually all of these people had come to a location not too far from where we are right here at the studios of WAUK in kind of south-central Wisconsin to train, to plan for this event involving the kidnapping of the governor. During the course of the sentencings this past week, the assistant United States attorney in federal court in western Michigan, where this case was charged, said the only remaining step in this kidnapping plot was for the governor to appear at her cottage. Went on to say her abduction was only meant to be the beginning of the reign of terror, including calling for riots, torching government officials in their sleep, and setting off a domino effect of violence across the country. Horrific plans in place by this group to undermine not only the authority, the physical security of the governor, but also to throw American justice into disarray as well. As I indicated, a very, very compelling presentation by the government. This past week, two of these major ringleaders, Barry Croft, sentenced to 19 years imprisonment for his involvement in that plot. Adam Fox, sentenced to 16 years imprisonment for his involvement in that. You might say, well, gee, how did the government find out about this? Indeed, the FBI had inside this group an internal informant who not only was able to monitor what was going on, but stop this before it happened. And so did not, in fact, go forward. When the plot itself was extinguished, the governor blamed then-President Donald Trump, saying that he had given, quote, comfort to those who spread fear and hatred and division. And about 19 months after leaving office, Trump said of the kidnapping, the plan was a fake deal. Well, it wasn't a fake deal, Mr. Former President. The reality is that these people were serious. They had plainly committed overt acts in furtherance of it. They were stopped by some very good and effective law enforcement. And now virtually all of them being sentenced in state and federal court for their involvement in this kind of activity. As always, we've got callers calling in. Dana from La Crosse this morning, glad to have you with us. Your comments or questions already here on Morning Cannolis.
Good morning, Mr. Santel. It's really a pleasure to speak with you.
Glad to be with us, Dana.
Yeah, you got a great show, and I really like the way you present your discussion. Very nonpartisan, but you spell it out so well for the everyday citizen, everyday listener. And
appreciate
so thank
that
you
very
so much,
much
for this great show. Question about first the Title 42.
Yes.
So the Republicans are in these various states. They're claiming their reason they want to keep it alive is their concerns of COVID and bringing that over the border. Yet, preceding all of this, for 2 years now, they've all been denying it even exists, and it's even a worry. So does that hypocrisy get presented in court? What do the Supreme Court justices do in consideration of that hypocrisy?
And sure.
Why doesn't it have a larger effect on that?
Right, right.
And I do have another question that you brought up about Governor Whitner, but go ahead.
Sure. So to respond to that, the answer once again, Dana, is yes, yes, and yes. Not only in the court of public opinion, your identification of the hypocrisy here, right, is significant. That on the one hand, major leaders, not exclusively in Republican jurisdictions, but saying that COVID is not real. Now we're using that as a reason to continue this operation. Probably the real reason for this is we're opposed to people who are not United States citizens, who are not legally here from coming into our country, using this as a reason for stopping that immigration. So the hypocrisy is there. The question whether or not that is presented to the court, absolutely. And if you listen to some of the oral arguments on these cases, you will find on a regular basis that the courts will ask those practical, real-world questions about what's really going on here, what's happening here, how do you justify, how do you reconcile one with the other? Lawyers will write about this in their briefs. They will talk about it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court does, in fact, wrestle with it, even as they're addressing the specific legal, statutory issues here, the regulatory issues, the administrative processes, all of those kinds of things, very much a part of the Supreme Court's analysis and its consideration, certainly. Justices live in the real world, too. We're going to chat. Dana, stay with me for a moment, and I'll take your question about the Governor Whitmer situation right after the break here on Morning Cannolis, and we'll talk further about that and other issues facing our nation this morning.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Special Report. Former Pope Benedict XVI is dead in St. Peter's Square this morning. Crowds are gathering outside the Vatican. BBC reporter Paul Adams has more.
Joseph Ratzinger led the Catholic Church for 8 years. But his decision to become the first pope in nearly 600 years to resign proved more memorable than a lifetime of scholarship.
Already 78 years old, he was the oldest pontiff in nearly three centuries. During his tenure, the church began to confront the scandal of sexual abuse by priests around the world. He was forced to deny that he'd played any role in covering up abuse, but the cases continued to mount.
His softer side was first seen during a touching homily at Pope John Paul II's funeral mass. His funeral will take place this Thursday. Pope Francis will preside over the services. CBS News Special Report. I'm Stacy Lynn.
Join Max Inc. Radio this New Year's Eve as we present live at thespaceship.tv. Max Inc. Radio will broadcast live from the spaceship.tv studios 6 p.m. to midnight, plus live performances from the Civil Engineers. Linda and the Zeros. Porky's Groove Machine.
Who's there, the Spice Girls? Muy caliente.
Oh, they're not kidding. Live streaming video at thespaceship.tv and live on this Civic Media station. Let's party New Year's Eve starting at 6 p.m. live from thespaceship.tv. Happy New Year's from Civic Media and Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
You recall the Capitol insurrection? A post-ABC news poll showed 54% said Trump should be criminally charged for inciting the riot. That's like a litany of criminal allegations against the former president. You can say it's all partisanship and a witch hunt, but there wasn't one credible accusation against Obama during his entire eight-year term. So how Republicans just ignore all the evidence? I mean, he was perpetrating a coup on multiple levels.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Governor Tony Evers, Tim Michaels said you had gone, quote, full woke. Dr. Jill Underlie said that somebody who says that has no idea what we're doing in schools to make sure kids feel safe.
We want to make sure all kids feel supported. Tim Michaels, we don't teach CRT in our schools. You got to come to the present century here, Tim, and be cognizant of what actually goes in the schools. My guess is you've never been in a public school in Wisconsin.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8.
We are back in our weekly broadcast of news, of law, of government, and justice in America. And right before the break, I was chatting with Dana from La Crosse, had a great question about what's going on with respect to Title 42. Hopefully answer that. And Dana, you had another question about this matter, this horrific matter involving the attempt to kidnap the Michigan governor and people being brought to justice now in the federal courts, also in the state courts of Michigan for that heinous behavior. Dana, why don't you go ahead with your next question?
All right. Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me back for my second question. You exercised my brain, let me just say.
Good.
So regarding the punishments that are being handed down for these plotters of Gretchen Whitmer, I'm noticing some of them are rather high, 16 years, 17 years, with potential for life sentences.
Right.
With that in mind, with these sentences getting more severe, you know, we've noticed that a lot of the sentences for the insurrectionists, you know, they've been rather light in a lot of people's opinions. Do you think that with these more severe sentences being handed down for these plotters, that foreshadows maybe more severe penalties coming for the actual plotters and planners of the insurrection. Sure. And, the higher ups. Right. And, show some true accountability.
Right, right.
I'll take my answer off the air. I just want to say, again, Happy New Year, and let's hope justice prevails in 23.
Absolutely, Dana. And thanks for those best wishes to me and to Calvin and to all of our listeners out there about a more safe and secure 2023 and beyond. As to that particular question, so a couple of perspectives on that. These are not insignificant sentences. The federal system, judges impose sentences based upon something called the sentencing guidelines, gives them some ranges of sentences to impose. Undeniably, some of the less culpable conspirators in this group of 14 in the state and federal sentences, a little bit less time imprisonment. But these are, as Dana just said, they're significant sentences, sending an important message about what we've talked about a lot on this broadcast, which is deterrence, right? Specific deterrence as to these individuals and people like them who might think that they would be encouraged by this kind of behavior. The answer is no. You will not only be found out, you'll be prosecuted, and you'll be sent to jail for significant periods of time. That's specific deterrence, and then general deterrence, which is if there are other people out there, whether they're thinking about a specific plot like this absolutely offensive, horrific plot hatched by these folks or others. And Dana talked about the plot to overthrow our government as another one of those. The purpose of those prosecutions also deterrent as to the specific people who were there. Something in excess of 900 people already prosecuted for their on-site involvement on January 6th. That's not insignificant. As Dana said, some of those getting as something as simple as probation, home arrest, others getting months and years imprisoned. Some of them at higher levels, including members who were organizing and supervising, getting more than 10 years, 12 years, 13, 14, 15 years in jail. And those are still the exception, not the rule, but plainly heading in that direction, even as we know that the trials of people like the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, those are still continuing this month, next month, into February. I do, responding, Dana, to your specific question, anticipate that this not only trend, but this sending of the messages by judges, which has been going on for years, candidly, about what happens if you engage in this kind of conduct, those kinds of messages, the deterrent messages being sent, that can and should continue, not only for those people who might engage in violence, whether it is in Michigan, in Wisconsin, and other places around our nation, but for those, most importantly, I think this is the core of your question, Dana, who would be responsible for organizing, supervising. To that point, Dana, we're going to be spending much of our second hour this morning talking about the January 6th report and what it shows, what it has revealed about those higher level decision makers, those leaders, if you will, I'll say it's with a small L, who might have brought, as Liz Cheney said, lit the match, brought people to the United States Capitol, Washington, D.C., and prompted what happened on January 6th, perhaps also including our former president. So great message there about deterrence. Yes, it should continue, should be a message not only to those individuals, but to others out there who might think of doing the same kind of thing. Let's talk about another very, very serious matter in our nation's criminal prosecution history recently. We all recall well, still horrified by the November 13th attack of students at the University of Idaho. Their names were Ethan Chapin, Madison Morgan, Zaina Nordahl, Kaylee Calves, and others who were murdered, again, on the campus of the University of Idaho back in November. All of them, horrifically killed, four University of Idaho students at that time. And the question for a long period of time is, what is law enforcement doing to follow up on this? State, local, plainly federal law enforcement as well, trying to find out what happened here. And some increasing concern about whether or not the person who is responsible for the killings of those four University of Idaho students was in fact going to be brought to justice. In fact, just yesterday, a Pennsylvania judge in Monroe County, which is north of Allentown in Pennsylvania had before him an individual named Brian Christopher Koberger, K-O-H-B-E-R-G-E-R. He's 28 years old. He was booked into custody on an arrest warrant that did, in fact, come out of Moscow, Idaho, which was the place where the arrest warrant was issued by the prosecutor there. It charged Koberger with first-degree murder, being held at that Monroe County Correctional Facility, according to all the reports coming out of that proceeding. The authorities plainly indicating that they believe that they have the individual who is responsible for that. The Moscow police chief, a fellow named James Fry, said just yesterday that we have an individual in custody who committed these horrible crimes, and I do believe our community is safe. But importantly, again, this notion of law enforcement protecting us all, but we still need to be vigilant, the police chief said. All of this perhaps bringing closer to justice the person who committed these horrific crimes. I will say, as I did for 30 years, that an individual charged with an offense conduct of this kind, of any kind, is presumed innocent until proven guilty. That attaches by virtue of our Constitution, our federal Constitution, our state Constitution, and that presumption of innocence remains with Mr. Koberger to the time, and we certainly anticipate that a court or a jury will, in fact, do this, but until that time that there is a criminal judgment of guilty imposed upon him in our system, that remains with him. Even so, bringing to an end this initial portion of the investigation, bringing Koberger into custody, the judge ordering that he be extradited to Idaho next month, which is probably in the next few days, if not weeks, court records likewise confirming that. And so we have someone now finally in custody. Plainly, well, the question is, what's going to happen next? Well, he's brought back to Idaho to face those state charges. They're not federal charges. State charges there, these four counts of first-degree murder with respect to the murders of these four University of Idaho students back in November. Plainly, a lot of pretrial proceedings. He will have an arraignment in front of the state court judge who will set time for hearings and motions and then eventually set a trial. And again, Mr. Koberger, like every other criminal defendant, has the right to defend himself in a trial. If he chooses to do that, he could also eventually enter into a plea agreement, perhaps with the government. Difficult to envision that Mr. Koberger, assuming the evidence is credible, that is material, and the government can, in fact, and probably will be able to show beyond a reasonable doubt in our criminal system, that's the standard, to a jury by a unanimous verdict, to a court, likewise, beyond a reasonable doubt, that he is, in fact, guilty of those offense conduct behaviors, very likely that Mr. Koberger will spend the rest of his life in prison, in Idaho prison, for committing those horrific, horrific, violent murders. But again, the presumption of innocence remains with him until that is done. We will certainly continue to watch that story as it proceeds forward. Let's go in the opposite direction then. Another big piece of news coming out again just yesterday from the annals, from the books of law and justice and government in America. And this has to do with the president's pardon authority. We have spent a fair amount of time on this very broadcast talking about this delivery of authority by our United States Constitution, by those folks who wrote the Constitution, people like James Madison, George Mason, many, many others, who established a system of checks and balances. Again, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the implications of those checks and balances in our second hour as we get more centrally to January 6th. Checks and balances inside our Constitution. One of the very few, perhaps even the exclusive authority vested in one of the branches of government is the power to commute sentences, to issue pardons. And it's granted to our chief executive in the federal system. The language in the Constitution, Article 2 of the Constitution, which is all about the executive branch, Article 1 being the legislative branch, Article 3 being the judicial branch, Article 2 establishing who the president is, what the authorities of that person are under our Constitution. Among those says pardons can be issued by our president. And so just this past week, the president of the United States of America has had every other president preceding Joseph Biden issued pardons in six different cases. I'm going to spend a little bit of time this morning talking about those because it stands in marked contrast to some of the other pardons that were issued by the former president, Donald Trump, during his term. We've talked a lot about this. There is a process for pardons in America. It goes through the Justice Department. There's an Office of a Pardon Attorney. If indeed, typically, you have served your sentence, if you have somehow done something in your life that justifies this special commutation, special consideration to basically wipe clean, if you will, the records of these convictions of various things, because you have done things in your life that show that you not only acknowledge your guilt, which is an important part of this, but also understand the importance of adding to the community. Under those circumstances, the Supreme Justice of our executive branch, which is the president, in the execution of justice, can issue a pardon. And again, typically goes through a review process at the United States Department of Justice coming up through the Office of Pardon Attorney. And again, Joe Biden just yesterday announced pardons in six different cases, a lot of them having to do with these kinds of things where justice now requires, in his view, and I think as you listen to some of these stories, the views of many people, the acknowledgement that these people have, in fact, paid their debts to society, as we often say, and now warrant these kinds of commutations. Beverly Ann Ibn Tamas, she's 80 years old. At the age of 33, she was convicted of killing her husband. You might think, gosh, that sounds just horrific. She testified, however, that her husband beat her, verbally abused her, and threatened her. She told jurors she shot him moments after he had assaulted her while she was pregnant. A judge at the time had refused to allow some expert testimony on battered women's syndrome, which is a psychological condition, as we now know, that can develop among victims of domestic violence. She went on to serve 5 years of incarceration, credit for some time served. Appeal was among the first that arranged this notion of the battered women's syndrome, and her case is now being studied by academics. She was one of those six people, was pardoned by the president, again acknowledging that her crime, that she also acknowledged killing her husband, nonetheless mitigated by the fact that she herself was a victim of domestic violence. That's the kind of person who I would offer to you. Obviously, the president, in his review of this, the Justice Department also agrees with the notion she is the kind of person who warrants this kind of special constitutional gift, if you will. It is regarded by the Supreme Court as just that. Supreme Court has talked about it as an expression of grace by the executive. Charles Brins Jackson, 77 years old, he's from South Carolina. He had pleaded guilty to possession and sale of spirits without tax stamps when he was 18, involved in a single illegal whiskey transaction. He tried to enlist in the Marines, was rejected because of the conviction. The president also pardoning him just yesterday. Again, a situation where the crime plainly, while it existed, acknowledged, nonetheless appropriate for a pardon. After the break, I'm going to talk about a few more of those and then finish up with another significant piece of news from the annals of our news headlines this past week. Stay with me here on Morning Cannolis as we talk about those and other important issues.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Pat, I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
To protect his family from disaster, Steve used his camera phone.
Done.
By taking pictures of his important documents, Steve can always have them stored online. Learn more simple disaster prep tips at ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Self-monitor your blood pressure in 4 easy-to-remember steps. Self-monitoring is power. Visit managerbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association, in partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Daytime highs approaching 37 this afternoon under cloudy skies, southwest winds around 5 miles an hour. Cloudy skies again tonight. Mixed precipitation possible at times. Lows dip down to about 32. Daytime highs approaching 42. Tomorrow, cloudy skies. A dusting of snow tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 21 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
We are back here on Morning Cannolis. We're talking this morning, as we do virtually every Saturday morning, about major news stories, trying to make some sense of them in the areas of law and justice and the administration of justice in America. Right before the break, I was talking about this all-important authority given to our United States presidents under Article 2 of the United States Constitution, and that is to pardon people. The authority, as I indicated, one of the very few in our Constitution that does not have a check and a balance on it. You can't go into court and challenge these. The Congress does not have the capacity to override a pardon issued by a president. It is pretty much a complete authority by the president to do what he or perhaps one day she wants to do with respect to this incredible authority. Again, we say this because it underscores the importance of selecting presidents who have a sensibility to these kinds of things. What is the rule of law all about? What is justice about? And what are equities about? Being fairness and being fair and exhibiting fairness in the administration of justice. Well, I would offer that President Biden just yesterday, in the pardons that he most recently accomplished, has been doing just that. Let me talk about a couple more of those to give you some sense of what a pardon authority is properly about, how it's properly exercised. This fellow, his name is Gary Parks Davis, 66. He's from Arizona. When he was 22, he admitted using a telephone for a cocaine transaction. Serious matter, absolutely. Served a 6-month sentence on nights and weekends, county jail, completed probation in 1981. After the offense, Davis earned a college degree, working steadily throughout his life, owns a landscape business, managing construction projects, volunteered at children's high school in his community, the kind of person who has turned his life around. And again, not in any way minimizing the significance of the conviction, the criminal behavior in which he did in fact engage, but recognized now by our chief executive, this is a fellow who should be pardoned in the interests of justice. What about a fellow named Edward Lincoln DeCoto of Dublin, California? He pleaded guilty also at the age of 23 to being involved in a marijuana trafficking conspiracy. Once again, a serious matter. Released from prison in December of 2000 after serving a couple of years in prison. Before the offense, DeCoto had served honorably in the United States Army. The Army reserved numerous awards in service to our nation. Edward DeCoto yesterday pardoned by our president for that conduct. Again, admitting the guilt, admitting to doing the offense conduct, but putting his life together in a way that justifies this expression of grace, as the Supreme Court has called it. And finally, let's talk about the sixth among them. His name is Vicente Rey Flores. He's 37 years old as a 19-year-old. And again, notice the differences in ages here, that these are offenses committed traditionally, at least in this group, by younger people. Flores had consumed ecstasy and alcohol while serving in the Air Force. He pled guilty to a special court-martial, acknowledging once again the seriousness of his conduct, sentenced to 4 months of confinement, a loss of about $2,800 in pay, reduction in rank, participated in a 6-month rehabilitation program that gives select enlisted offenders a chance to return to active duty after therapy and the education that they would receive in that program. His reduction in rank was amended. He remains on active duty. He earns medals other awards for his service, again, turning his life around, again, serving our nation in a way that yesterday justified Joe Biden's giving him a presidential pardon under Article 2 of the Constitution. Why do I raise all that? Well, it's news. Certainly, it's significant in the administration of justice in our nation. It's a constitutional matter, as I've once again instructed and talked about this morning. But beyond that, look at the how it's all of these pardons and previous pardons also issued by this president stand in contrast to the kinds of pardons that the former president, Donald Trump, issued. Among them, for example, to a Roger Stone for federal involvement in this attempt to defraud people to build the Southwest border wall. Charges now brought by the state system. A position of a pardon for Paul Manafort, his prior campaign manager, for all of the crimes that he committed, the subject of an awful lot of review and analysis and presentation in federal courts by the Justice Department. And again, even as late as this past week, we've got talk of the extent to which in the last days of the Trump administration, talk about blanket pardons for anybody who might be involved in January 6th. Blanket pardons. And again, the notion behind a pardon is that you confess, you acknowledge that you have committed crimes. That's a key portion of this. And that therefore you are somehow in some way entitled to this special consideration commutation of sentence. We know from just this past couple of days and weeks that there was an awful lot of discussion in the waiting days of the Trump administration about whether or not the president would not only perhaps pardon himself, but others around him, his own family members, senior aides, talking actively, as these transcripts have now shown coming out of the January 6th committee analysis, talking about whether or not there should be a request of the president to issue blanket pardons. We know the president did, in fact, issue some pardons. We talked about those on previous broadcasts. An important thing to keep in mind as we think about the exercise of this all-important constitutional authority by this president, by past presidents, and by future presidents as well. And finally, in our last moments of this segment, this first hour of Morning Cannolis, and going into the second hour, let's return to the former president. Some very big news, again, issuing just in the past couple of days, the past week or so, including even as we speak, the release of about 6 years of his federal tax returns. We know that the Department of Justice is looking at the former president in connection with many of the January 6th violations. This has to do with matters that are somewhat related to that, arguably, but go to a years-long attempt, about 3.5 years, by the House Ways and Means Committee to try to obtain the federal tax returns of the then sitting president. An effort pursued by the House Ways and Means Committee, also by the Joint Committee on Taxation in our federal courts to try to get to compel the Department of Treasury to release these to the United States Congress. You know well that it has been the tradition of every presidential candidate, and yes, every president annually, to release their tax returns. Why? Just so Americans know what their president is all about financially, economically, what kinds of businesses he, one day she, is involved in, those kinds of things important for transparency in America. That going on, finally resulting by the United States Supreme Court saying, yes, indeed, the House Ways and Means Committee does, in fact, have the right under a federal statute to get these tax returns by the United States Department of the Treasury. Released in the past several days, the past week or so, a report issued, and then, just in recent days, the tax returns themselves being reviewed as we are on the air this morning, yesterday, today, tomorrow, to analyze exactly what those show. In the first moments of our next hour, we're going to talk more about what those tax returns show, what they don't show, and what it means, what this means in terms of the rule of law in America. Stay with us for that second hour of our examination of law, government, and the aspiration for justice here in the United States of America.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
Finish your high school diploma for you and your family. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.